To really gauge what the diet could do, we looked at those participants whose medications had stayed constant and how the diet affected A1C, the principal gauge of blood glucose control. The ADA diet had reduced the A1C by 0.4 percentage point, a good change. But the vegan diet was 3 times more effective. It had reduced A1C by 1.2 percentage points. The average person's value fell from 8.0 to 6.8% during the 22-week study. That is a stronger effect than is seen with a typical diabetes medication. The common diabetes drug, metformin, glucophage, for example, reduced A1C by about 0.6 percentage point in a large research trial. The vegan diet also proved highly effective in reducing body weight and cholesterol. To put all this in perspective, the landmark UK prospective diabetes study showed that a 1-point drop in A1C for people with type 2 diabetes lowers the risk of eye or kidney complications by about 37%. This is the effect of just the A1C drop without considering the ability of the diet to also reduce cholesterol and blood pressure. In the next chapter, I will show you how you can test this diet to see what it can do for you. But let's look a little bit closer at the science behind this approach. Toward the perfect diet. Setting aside animal products and keeping oily foods to a minimum may sound challenging, but our participants commonly reported just the opposite. One man, Walter, said, "I'm amazed at how easy it was to adapt to this diet, and I feel great. Within 2 months, I lost 20 pounds. And the more amazing thing to me is that my glucose averages have fallen by 30 to 40 points. For Mark, the change was an adventure. I tried new restaurants, new recipes, and different foods I never would have eaten before. My main goal was to lose weight, and I've lost a good 30 pounds so far. When I started, my fasting blood sugar was 260 to 360, and it dropped like a rock. Now I'm between 130 and 135, and I don't get tired in the afternoon like I used to." Nancy agreed. She felt totally adjusted to the diet within about 30 days. "And within 5 months of making the change," she said, "my blood sugar fell so much that I was able to stop one of my medications. I have much more energy and really feel tremendous." I will walk you through the diet step by step. If it sounds like a very healthful diet, it certainly is, and not just for controlling blood sugar. In 1990, Dean Ornish, MD, a young Harvard-trained physician, discovered a remarkable feature of low-fat vegetarian diet. He tested the diet in individuals with heart disease and added other healthy lifestyle changes, regular exercise, stress modification, and smoking cessation. Because the diet contained no animal products, it had no cholesterol at all and very little fat. After a year's time, each patient had a special X-ray of the heart called an angiogram, and Dr. Ornish's team compared the results with angiograms done on the same patients at the beginning of the study. The results made medical history. The patient's coronary arteries, which had been blocked by years of poor diet, were actually starting to open again. The difference was clearly visible in 82% of the patients after 1 year. This occurred without surgery or drugs, even without cholesterol-lowering medication. Other researchers have shown that this same sort of diet change reduces blood pressure. Apparently, eliminating animal fats reduces the viscosity, thickness, of the blood. That is, the blood becomes less like grease and more like water, so it easily flows through the arteries, causing blood pressure to fall. Blood pressure is also reduced by the potassium in vegetables and fruits, and other characteristics of plant foods augment this benefit. Vegetarians are slimmer, too. The average person who embraces a vegetarian diet loses about 10% of his or her body weight. These changes would be welcomed by most of us. But if you have diabetes, they can be life-saving. This is because, as you heard in Chapter 1, persistently high blood sugar can attack the blood vessels of your heart, eyes, kidneys, and legs. What kills most people who have diabetes, that is, those who have not made the diet changes you are hearing about, is damage to their hearts. a diet that reverses that process, turning the clock backward on heart disease, reducing blood pressure, and trimming weight, is powerful medicine for everyone with diabetes, whether type 1 or type 2. Imagine if your eyes were damaged by the disease. An ophthalmologic surgeon, laser in hand, would carefully try to repair your tender retinas. But what if foods could help avert this damage in the first place? A diet change that brings your blood sugar under control, brings your blood pressure down, and helps rejuvenate your arteries gives a measure of respite to the tiny blood vessels in your eyes. It does the same for the tiny vessels that make up the filtering unit in your kidneys, making it less likely that you will ever need dialysis. And of course, it works powerfully inside the heart. Now, do not misunderstand me. I am not suggesting that you should forego needed medical treatments and rely on diet alone. But a diet change, if it goes far enough and begins early enough, can revolutionize your health, dramatically cut your risk of complications, and can even reverse these complications to a degree. Inside the cell. In discussing type 2 diabetes, I have described each cell of the body as being rather like a gummed-up lock. Research has shown this analogy to be surprisingly apt. Indeed, insulin's ability to work is blocked by the accumulation of something within the cells, not gum, but fat. In the February 12, 2004 issue of the New England Journal of Medicine, Yale University researchers reported an amazing discovery. They tested young adults whose parents or grandparents had had type 2 diabetes. All were thin and healthy, and none had diabetes at that point. But some were insulin resistant, meaning that when they were given a test dose of glucose, it built up more than it should have in their bloodstream. The researchers found out why. Inside their muscle cells were tiny amounts of fat, fat that interfered with insulin's ability to work. Their bodies made insulin normally, and it reached their muscle cells with no problem. Once it got there, though, it did not work properly. The muscle cells simply could not fully respond to insulin because they contained bits of fat, like gum jammed in a lock, rendering a key useless. How did this fat get there? Well, muscle cells normally store a tiny amount of fat, which provides an energy source for physical activity. The amount is normally quite small, and the fat simply waits for that day when you are much more active than usual and need a little bit of extra energy. For some reason, in these young people, fat had built up much more than it should have, to levels 80% higher than in other young people. The fat buildup had reached the point where it was gumming up the lock. That is, it was interfering with the cell's ability to respond to insulin, and that meant that diabetes was very likely in their future unless something changed in a major way. I should emphasize that the fat inside your cells is different from the fat around your waistline. Even if you are quite slim, you may still be accumulating fat within your muscle cells. The participants in the Yale study were slim, averaging only 141 pounds. They were young and healthy. But just as young people who smoke are setting the stage for cancer decades later, young people who accumulate fat inside their muscle cells are paving the way for diabetes. Until now, diabetes diets have not been designed to alter what goes on inside the cells. Instead, they have been designed to compensate for the problem, so to speak. Because your cells cannot handle glucose, that is, insulin has trouble getting glucose into them, the diets limit sugars and foods that contain carbohydrate because when carbohydrate is digested, it releases sugars. But what if a change in diet could actually alter the fat buildup within the cells and reverse the trend toward gradually worsening insulin resistance? I believe this is exactly what we can do. Exactly what you will do as you make the diet changes described in this book. But first, a few more details from inside the cells. Tiny furnaces that burn fat. There is a term for the tiny bits of fat that build up inside muscle cells. Scientists call them intramyocellular lipid. Intra means inside, myo is muscle, and lipid is fat, literally fat inside muscle cells. As you have seen, these traces of fat start accumulating many years before diabetes manifests. Let's go one step further and look at how the fat builds up. Your cells have microscopic furnaces or burners that are supposed to metabolize bits of fat and convert it into energy. If all is operating normally, fat enters the cell and these tiny burners use it up. These burners are called mitochondria, and they are responsible for turning fat or other fuel sources into energy to power your muscle cells. If you are steadily accumulating fat, that is a sign that your burners, your mitochondria, are falling down on the job. In type 2 diabetes, the problem appears to be too few mitochondria. That is, people with type 2 diabetes have fewer mitochondria than they need to burn up the accumulating fat. If they had more of these little furnaces inside each cell, things would be very different. Surprisingly enough, it may be that the number of mitochondria you have depends on what you eat. Let me describe a second research study. At Pennington Biomedical Research Center in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, researchers studied 10 young men. They averaged just 23 years of age. They were reasonably trim, averaging 174 pounds, and were healthy. The researchers put them on a high-fat diet that drew about half its calories from fats. This is much more fat than you would want to have in your diet, but it is not far different from what many people actually eat. After just 3 days on a high-fat diet, the men had accumulated significantly more intramyocellular lipids. So the first lesson of this study was that fat builds up quickly. Depending on the foods you eat, you can pack fat into your cells surprisingly rapidly. Then, the researchers tested the genes that produce mitochondria. Just as you have genes in your cells that allow you to make bones, hormones, skin, hair, and all the other structures of your body, you also have genes that serve as blueprints for mitochondria. It turned out that the fatty foods these volunteers ate did more than just pack fat into their cells. They actually turned off the genes that would help burn fat. The genes that produce mitochondria were in fact partially disabled. It was as if the men's bodies were trying to avoid burning the fat they'd eaten so they could save it inside the cells for future use. Imagine what this means. You have eaten fatty foods, and as a result, tiny bits of fat have accumulated in your muscle cells. This fat interferes with the normal working of the cells, including their ability to respond to insulin. If insulin is unable to work, glucose cannot get into the cells and it builds up in the bloodstream. Then, those fatty foods actually seem to disable your genes that would produce the mitochondria you need to burn up this accumulating fat. Your ability to eliminate fat inside your cells seems to be slowed down when you eat fatty foods. Let me speculate about why all this occurs. Your body chemistry began to take shape many thousands of years ago, long before fast food restaurants and convenience stores ever got their first shipments of cheese and fryer grease. Our human ancestors did not find fatty foods growing on trees, or at least not many of them. On the rare occasions when they ate fatty foods, meat, eggs, nuts, or avocados, for example, their bodies may actually have tried to save some of the fat from these foods in case they needed it to power their muscles or food became scarce. Thus, it would not be surprising if a sudden influx of fat in the muscle cells signals them to turn off the fat-burning mitochondria and save the fat for future needs. Today, of course, that is the last thing we want. We want to power up our mitochondria, turn on those little furnaces to eliminate fat. Well, can you get rid of this fat? Let's say you stopped eating fatty foods. Would intramyocellular lipid start to disappear? Let me share the results of a startling experiment. At Catholic University in Rome, Italy, 8 patients underwent gastric bypass surgery. The operation is commonly done as a last-ditch treatment for massive obesity, and for good reason. What it involves is this. The stomach is stapled so that only a tiny pouch, about the size of an egg, is left to receive food. Then, the intestine is cut in two. The first part of the intestine simply lies unused, while the lower portion of the small intestine is attached directly to the tiny stomach pouch. In this way, the patient cannot eat much food, and there is much less intestine available to absorb the nutrients from whatever food is eaten. After the procedure, the patients were essentially starving. They could eat very little food at any given meal, and any fats they ate were poorly absorbed because the first part of the small intestine, which is where fats are absorbed, was no longer connected to the stomach. As you might imagine, they lost weight, dropping from an average of more than 300 pounds, 137 kilograms, to 229 pounds, 104 kilograms, in the first 6 months. That is not unusual after such drastic surgery. What was striking was the effect on their cells. The fat inside their muscle cells, their intramyocellular lymphate, dropped by 87%. And even though they were still overweight, their insulin resistance had largely disappeared. I am not recommending that you have this procedure. I am presenting these findings to make a critically important point. The fat inside your cells is not a permanent fixture. If the influx of fat stops, the fat inside the cells dissipates, and when that happens, the cells start to regain their normal function. Surgery is a drastic solution, but the Italian researchers also tested whether a low-calorie diet without surgery could deplete intramyocellular lipid, and it did. Following a 1,200-calorie diet for 6 months, the patients lost about 30 pounds on average and eliminated about 8% of the fat inside their cells. Now, that modest result came from a diet that focused just on cutting calories rather than on eating particular types of foods, which will be the focus of this program. The next step is to make the diet more powerful so it works a little more like surgery without all the obvious risks of an operation. Let's go a step further. At Imperial College School of Medicine in London, researchers studied a group of individuals following a vegan diet. They compared the participants to others who were similar in age and body weight, but were not following a vegan diet. When the researchers measured the intramyocellular lipid in each participant's calf muscles, they found it was 31% lower in the vegans than in the omnivores. It looks as if there is something about the diet that helps prevent fat buildup in cells. These studies show, loudly and clearly, that the accumulation of fat in the cells and all the problems it causes are not simply a matter of genes. Genes do play a role, but these effects are very much a matter of diet, too, and it can change dramatically. In part two, you will see how to select foods to address this problem in the most powerful way possible.